Hello and welcome to the Wolves Report. I'm Ryan Lester and thank you for joining us for episode 99. Tonight we'll give you the match and player analysis of Wolves' 3-1 defeat to Crystal Palace, take your questions and look ahead to Sunday's finale away at Liverpool. Of course, I'm delighted to be joined by our club captain, Mark Nuck, and we are delighted to be joined by David Kelly. Ned joined Wolves from Newcastle in 1993 for £750,000, where he scored 36 goals in 103 games. And 20 years later, he kicked me in a charity game. Ned, thank you for joining us on the show.
I was a bargain all those years ago.
Not so much in the friendly. Taking us back to modern times, you were doing co-coms for BBC WM on Saturday afternoon, so I'd love to get your take on Wolves 1, Palace 3.
Yeah, enjoyed doing the commentating with Azael in between various jobs that I've had. I've been lucky that the BBC have been very good that they invite me back on. I think overall, really, I think it's a slight disappointment at the end of the season, isn't it? The form hasn't been brilliant. The result against Luton was a very good result, but all being told, that the last sort of couple of 6 weeks of the season have been a little bit disappointing. I think commentator's curse, because I was saying how good the Crystal Palace front three were before the game, and then they go and score a goal each. So a slight disappointment towards the end of the season.
Yeah, it was a frustrating afternoon, but I think we all kind of expected that we were expecting a Palace win, and you should never think that with your team going into the home game of the season, but Wolves do look a tired side at the moment, and it was almost an inevitable result.
It was inevitable. I mean, I went 3-1 on, you know, our little group chat, and I don't know why, but I was really wound up by it. I probably owe a few apologies, mainly to a few people on Twitter, to be honest, but I was so ratty after the game. It wasn't the fact we lost the game. It was probably the manner in which we lost the game, because I felt like they were first to everything. Every first ball, every second ball, every 50-50, they seemed to be picking up. They seemed to have more energy than we did. Now, I know we've had injuries, but it just felt like they're just more determined to win the game than we were. And it was just really disappointing. I thought the goals we conceded were poor. The first was Gomez gets caught out, and then a couple of passes later, they score. I mean, it's a great goal by Elise, but it's avoidable. And the second is a wallop downfield by Totti. They recycle it and bang, it's 2-0. And it just seemed to be every mistake we made was punished. But there was just such a lack of energy from the players. And I know it is the end of season, but I worry about carrying this kind of form into next year. Because I know you've got the closed season, but you've seen it happen with other teams when they hit the skids late on in the season. And I'm just a little bit concerned about it. We've got Liverpool coming up, and best win in the world. You're expecting it to be 1-10 after that game. And I'm just a little bit concerned at the minute. And I think there's a few problems of that club that need ironing out pretty quickly.
Nocky, don't you think that it was a little bit like City, give the ball away and all of a sudden City were on top of you and scored, and a little bit like Palace, mini sort of mistakes and then getting punished on the counter?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think when they got the ball, they attacked with intent, they attacked with purpose, and that was probably the difference, is that they had such mobility in that midfield. And they've got three really good attacking players, but we've still got some quality on the pitch as well. And, you know, we should be able to hurt teams more than we do. But you're absolutely right. Every time they got the ball, they just broke with pace and power, and they had everything was with intent. Whereas with us, we were so laboured and just very lethargic in the way we play. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That it was similar to playing City with the way they punished us.
Ned, just off air, we were talking about Wolves' front line and Palace front line. I know you talked about it then, the quality they've got. Now, I believe on Wolves' day, Neto, Cunha, they're as good as anybody in that sort of outside the top 6-7. But
agreed.
The problem is, although Cunha's back and Wangi's back with his goal record, these are still players that don't look fully match sharp. And that was clear to see on Saturday.
Well, that's a difficult thing that Gary's had to cope with. You know, with no disrespect to anybody else within the club, when you lose your two best strikers, it's going to be really difficult. And the young boy comes in, the main lads are out for a period of time. So it's always going to be disappointing that the fact that you haven't got those better goal scorers on the pitch for a start, and the boys that are coming in to replace them, you know, are filling in you know, ultimately that's what they were doing. They were filling in. They weren't tried and tested Premier League players. But I do think that Gary's got a really interesting time in the summer, and obviously all hopeful that he's going to be able to bring in people he wants to bring in and to bring in the quality he wants to bring in, because the squad is threadbare of strikers for a start. You know, without losing two or three of the good players that the club going to lose.
Now, Nocky, following on from what Ned said, we've talked about how well Gary's done, and obviously it's tapered off. The injuries have caught up with us. The self-inflicted small squad that the Custodians have decided to put forward this season. But let's not forget, Wolves haven't had a number nine all season. Cunha's not a proper number nine. Hwangi's a narrow forward. He's not really a number nine. So are we being a little bit harsh on the team itself? Or do you think we should cut them a little bit of slack because we haven't actually had a centre forward all year?
I think they're probably a victim of their own success because of how strongly we started the season. You take the first three or four games out, and then we really found our feet and won some games. Look, I've been frustrated by the last 10 games, but if you put it into perspective, I was expecting Wolves to be deep in a relegation battle this season. I thought we may go down because of the lack of quality we have. So they've definitely overachieved in that sense. I think the frustration probably lies with the January window. Had we got that right and we'd have bought in a couple of players, a centre forward, you know, the players that he wanted and was quite vocal that he wanted, there's a potential that we could have finished, you know, seventh, maybe nick a Europa League spot perhaps. But even if you don't do that, you're talking, what, 1.5 million a position? So the money you would have spent on a striker, you would have offset with your position in the league. So it just felt like they assessed it and thought, we're happy with what we got. We're not going to go down. We'll leave it alone. And it has caught up with the lads. There's been some fatigue slipping, and there's been some really poor performances. I don't think we're so much being harsh, but I think where the frustrations maybe lie is that we're continuously repeating the same mistakes in the way we're giving goals away. So that's probably where the frustrations are. But when you look at the season as a whole, they've probably overachieved. But then if you're 6 years into Premier League campaign, should your only target be survival? I'd argue that maybe you should be looking a little bit higher at this stage.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
just moving away briefly from the game, from what Nocky said then, Ned, that Tyler, who's usually on that, couldn't be with us tonight. He keeps saying it always feels like it's a massive summer for Wolves, and that's been the case now for 3 or 4 years. Whereas you see Brentford or Brighton or Villa, they're bringing in one or two, selling one or two, and there seems to be a plan, a strategy. Where at Wolves, it seems a little bit more sporadic, and until there's that consistency, these problems are going to continue.
I think that the difficult part of that was with Lopetegui going so late and Gary having absolutely no time to come in and to do anything, you know, and it was quite clear building up to the transfer window in January that there wasn't going to be a fat lot of movement going in or out anyway. And I think that's been a part of the difficult thing with the Wolves this season. So I get it's typical because the club have been in the Premier League for a good while now. But if you looked at the start of the season, did you really think that those three teams that come up were going to be challenging for anything?
You know, I was surprised they were in it so long, to be honest. And credit to Luton, they've been, I wouldn't say a breath of fresh air. They've had their own style and their own identity. And credit to Rob for getting them playing and finding a way to play to make them a danger. So credit to them. But, Ned, it won't be like that next season. Maybe Leeds, obviously not. Leicester up, Ipswich up. The three teams coming up are far better than the three teams coming down.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the quality in the playoffs and the quality in the two teams that have come up is going to be really interesting. Not sure about Ipswich. I'm hopefully proven wrong because I know a few people there and I'd hope for them to do well. But the difficult part for everything for Gary in the summer is who does he keep, who gets poached, who comes in and takes the best players, and who does he then replace them with, and how much has he got? You know, it's all right. There's this thing about bringing people in and stuff like that. People have got massive choices now. So are you going to go to a Brentford, like you just said there, are you going to go to a Brentford or a Brighton instead of the Wolves? Are you going to go to Liverpool or whatever instead of City? Players have got choices, and it's going to be quite difficult, I think, that to be able to attract the right people that Gary Ward will actually want. People will come. You pay the money, they'll come. I get it. But if you've got three or four different clubs in the Premier League that you can go to, are Wolves going to be top of your list? That's my little bit of a worry.
It's an interesting one with that as well, Nocky, because how much of a say does Gary have? I know we've got Matt Hobbs upstairs, that we go back to the good work that Matt did 18 months ago with Craig Dawson, fantastic, Mario Lemina. And now Cooney, who took a little bit of time to get settled in, he's turned out to be really good. But we need another window like that. But we don't need three this time, we need six. And that's as a minimum, even if a couple are going, because, Nocky...
Yeah, I'm sure Gary O'Neill's got a say in who comes in, but I'm not sure how much of a say. You can probably benchmark it against selling, getting rid of Kalajic, getting rid of Silva. I think he would have probably only signed off on that if they told him there was someone coming in the other way. So how much of a say does he have? I don't know. I'm guessing he has his input, but it's going to be Hobbs who makes that decision. And he has got some right, but he's also got some wrong as well. And my worry is we're probably going to lose two of the big ones. I think Ait Nouri is going to be attracting big interest. Kilman, I think, and I think Neto is the one most likely to go because we're carrying an expensive asset who we're only getting 60-70% of a season out of. So I think he'd be the one they're looking to offload. So if they do sell those couple of players and they can make 80 odd million perhaps out of them, are we going to invest the full 80 million or is some of that going to be kind of softened the way to other endeavours? And you're going to need six players now, I think, before you even start selling what you've got. So it's a massive ask. They're going to have to do some real good business. But in saying that, you know, we spent a lot of money on Goncalo Guedes, who was a disaster. We spent 9 million on Mario Lemina, who I think has been one of the best midfielders at the club while I've been watching them. And the same with João Gomes. He was, 15 million quid. So you can do smart business. The problem is if you do that business, you've got to get it right. And if we don't, then we're going to find ourselves in a bit of trouble. So we seem to say it every season, don't we? It's a massive summer for us. And this one feels a little bit bigger than some of the others.
Sorry, Nocky, I was going to say that goes back to the signing of Silva, Fabio, at 30 whatever million.
35 million.
If you're looking at getting 80 million in for three players and trying to bring in six, you're not spending 30 million on all of them. You're spending tens and twelves and that type of thing, aren't you? You're not spending not spending 35 million on a possibility of an 18-year-old again.
Yeah, it's for me. I know it's nice to be linked and doing the same kind of business as the big boys, but it's about quality. People get obsessed with names and stuff like that. And we've seen, I know Mario was sort of flirted with being a Premier League. His career drifted out after he was at Juventus for a little bit, but now he's come back. He's got a second win. He's done fantastic. It's about quality for me. And I do think in terms of if they say, for example, you sell all those players, you bring in 100 million, and if including the likes of Pedence and that, and maybe Semedo will go as well, because if he's linked with Saudi, as we saw. If Wolves reinvest all of that money with smart business, it could be a really good year, because quite often when teams create a lot of money, like Villa did with Grealish, like Liverpool with Coutinho, obviously on different levels to us, it allows you to invest and start again and get a second wind. Look at Villa now, Champions League. Liverpool, the Coutinho money, brought in Alisson, I think they brought in Van Dijk. It takes you on another level. Obviously, Wolves are trying to kick to sort of be a regular top half team again. It's not to that level, but those outs and that squad refresh could really do us some good, and hopefully that happens. You are listening.
Sorry, Ryan, don't forget as well, though, when you're thinking of spending this money or you're trying to get the players in, the rest of the 20 other teams in the Premier League are trying to do the same business. They're all trying to do the smart businesses as well. You know, even the big clubs want the bargains.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it's massive, because whereas a lot of those clubs, Ned, have got, you could look at most clubs and you can name their second striker or their second winger. Wolves have got one winger, Pedro Neto. Yeah. They don't have any other natural wide players. They don't have a centre forward. Now, whether that's brave or stupid, whatever fans' opinion is, I think I know the answer to what most fans would say in terms of allowing the squad to get that way. Wolves can't let that happen again, because if it does and they have the same injuries, they'll start off the season like they have done the last 2 months, and you'll be cut adrift by Christmas, and we'll have a Lopetegui situation again when we get desperate. Lopetegui did great, but we don't want to be doing that again.
It's got to be. I mean, they need to give Gary as much possible help as they can, because if they don't, then it's going to be a long, hard. It's going to be a long, hard summer for a start with no players coming in, and it's going to be a long, hard season.
You are listening and watching episode 99 of the Wolves Report with former Wolves striker and football BBC WM pundit Ned Kelly, our club captain Mark Nock, and myself, Ryan Lester. Go back into the game on Saturday afternoon, Ned. As good as the Palace forwards and midfielders were, it did feel like those goals were giveaways and Wolves could have done better.
Yeah, possibly, but Gary's trying to play the way out, isn't he? He's trying to get on the ball and play it through the thirds. You know, you are going to be liable to mistakes at certain times. And like you say, if you've got no focal point, you said earlier on about an absolute number nine. There's no focal point up top of the pitch sometimes, especially over the last couple of months when the strikers have been out completely. There isn't no focal point, so it's very difficult to play through the thirds when things are getting nicked because you've got nowhere to go. Whereas Mateta, I mean, he's an absolute beast, isn't he?
What a unit he is. I'd love him at Wolves.
I know. But before Christmas, he wasn't scoring and the Palace fans were having a little bit of a pop and all of a sudden he's had this run of games and run of form. And he's done very, very well, of course. But, you know, you wouldn't have said a fat lot about him before Christmas.
Yeah, just so sometimes it takes a while to settle in because I know me, Nocky and Tyler, the chap that's not here tonight, we weren't sure about Cunha. We could see moments of quality, but he almost needed those 6 months to settle in. I know Mateta's been there longer than that, but sometimes players need time to settle in. You've moved around yourself and also then are running the team as well because you can't expect to produce the goods 10 minutes and 15 minutes there. You need 80-90 to get up to rhythm. And, I mean, he's an absolute handful and he bullied us. But, Nocky, the one thing that was frustrated with, there's... We know Elise and what he does. He hugs the right hand side, he drops the shoulder, he cuts in, he curls in. Why are you offering him the inside? He's like, I mean, maybe there's not a lot he can do because he's brilliant, but Nocky, but surely you just force him on his weaker foot or kick him.
We've panicked, haven't we? We've panicked with showing him inside and he's finished it well, but it's not the first time we've conceded that goal. The Man United winner was from a pretty similar position where he's been able to bend it in the far post. Coventry was from a similar position as well. So
yeah, all similar goals.
We seem vulnerable from teams cutting in from that area. And look, quality players are going to find space. That's what they're there to do. So for me, you shut it down at source. You try and stop it before it gets to him. But when he has got the ball, you absolutely don't let him dance inside and pick his spot and shoot the way we did. And when you're backing off, it's... You're just asking for trouble, but quality players will do that to you, won't they? It's it was a disappointing goal, and it's not so much the finish I'm disappointed with. It's the way that we're giving the ball away. I don't think I've seen a team in this division give the ball away more than Wolves do, and that's not just from playing out from the back. That's from midfield and from poor decisions up front. We just seem to turn the ball over so quickly, and if you do that in this division, eventually you're going to get punished. And they punished us twice in succession. It was both our own making, really.
Would you say that though? Ned, would you say that in terms of not having the centre forward and the ball keeps coming back, but equally credit to Gary in a way because he knows how he wants his team to play, so he has to ingrain it into the players now, whether they're going to be here next season or not, to get the philosophy of the way he wants to play. There's no point lumping it down in the end when it's going to come back anyway. Try and get them playing. He sees the vision of Wolves going forward.
Yeah, I think you've got to give him that time as well to be able to do that, because he will want better players in the summer period. And as we've said, and it has been said, the season's been pretty good, really. It's just been this like fizzle out at the end of the season, and everybody's a little bit down because they've fizzled out at the end of the season. But there was no time for him in January. He couldn't do anything. There was no time for him when he first came in. He couldn't do anything. And with no disrespect whatsoever to anybody at the Wolves, Elise and Eze are going to be worldies. Let's be right. We saw them at the weekend. And those two guys are going to be up there with some of the best players you would imagine.
Yeah, it's annoying enjoying the opponent's performance, but you have to respect it. They're just pure, aren't they? Gliding class players, left foot, right foot.
And you can't say that about the Wolves players and the Wolves forward line. That's where Gary's got to try and get to. He's got to get to that position where he's able to rely on keeping the ball at the back and then being able to go forward really, really quickly. Which is how what Palace did at the weekend, and they were ruthless, wasn't they?
Yeah, they were really good. And Nocky, I do feel like we've been beating Wolves up quite a bit the last 2 months, but there's only so many positives you can find if you keep losing or drawing every week. But what I would say is, and I talked about it, Cunha's not fully fit. Huang, these guys, I don't think are fully at it yet. And to come back from hamstring injuries, it takes a while. So when you're up against a team that's full of confidence and absolutely flying, it's always going to be difficult.
It is, and we've seen some moments from Cunha. I mean, he wasn't fit against Forest. He was barely in the game, and then suddenly he breaks from the halfway line and smashes one in the top corner, and his finish was incredible. And his finish on Saturday was, again, just instinctive, smash straight into the top corner. And he's kind of, he's want to be looking to build the team around next season. Because I think
imagine him off a number nine, a proper big arse, chunky number nine that can hold it up and feed him in, bounce defenders off. I mean, that it sounds simple, Ned, but when you've got someone like that to play up front with that can make it stick and feed you in, or you can feed off them. But Wolves have had nobody like that for a year.
Yeah. We're singing the same hymn sheet, aren't we, all the time? It's been the same since the January window closed. You know, there was no magic bunny coming out of the hat at all. It was what it was going to be. And, you know, from Gary doing that brilliant job for all of the, up until the last sort of 6 or 7 weeks or whatever it's been, you know, everybody at the club was thinking this is working brilliantly. Injuries and you're snookered. And also when you carry that small squad, there is no replacement.
Well, not just that, Ned. You're the players like Nelson Semedo, like Mario, that are always seem to be fit and they always seem to knock out at least a 7 out of 10 performance. When you're driving these guys into the ground week in, week out, you can hardly sub them. They're knackered. And I know, again, this is something me and Tyler have a talk about in terms of sports science and players in the red zone. But you're a coach. You know this yourself. Mm-hmm. When players, it's shown on the data that players are close to an injury, you have to protect them or you risk them out being for weeks.
And it's difficult to do that when you're not carrying the quality behind. And that's the thing. Lads end up in the red zone week after week after week. But sometimes you have to sort of put them out. Villa have had the same team, haven't they, for the last whatever amount of months, because they've got nobody else. And they've had a super season. But the Wolves haven't got as much quality in the background as some of the other teams that are doing quite well.
Yeah, that depth is something that's got to be...
It's got to be addressed.
And how it just feels, like I said, everyone else has got a plan. It feels like Wolves are winging it. It feels like they've been... I mean, I might be wrong and they might come up with a brilliant summer. And I would love to be wrong about that, because if my team's had a brilliant window, fantastic. We're all on the same page. I don't think we can gamble again, Nocky, because it could go bad. But
I think the worry about the summer for me is that we haven't got a lot of money to spend, so we're not going to go early. So I don't think there'll be a great deal happen until after the Euros are finished. What we don't want to do is rock into the first couple of games of the season pretty much as we are now, because that would be a huge concern for me. I'm worried that most of our business, incoming-wise, is going to happen quite late in the window. I think we'll hold on as long as we can for Neto and Kilman offers, because we're going to want to get as much money as we can and force a little bit of a bidding war. So my concern is we're in the last couple of weeks and maybe we've got one free transfer, which I think could be Che Adams, someone like that. And the rest of them are going to be pretty much what we've got now. And then we're going to try and do that business later on, which can force mistakes. So the window is going to be an interesting one for us, but I think it's going to be pretty difficult, because when you've got the money we've got, you're going to be working in the nooks and crannies trying to make deals happen. And I don't see them happening quickly.
Yeah, it's a worry. Hopefully lessons have been learned, but how many times have we said that? So I say that with not too much optimism, but when it comes to Wolves, and if Wolves are right and I'm wrong, then it can only be a good thing. We'll just finish up on one thing from Saturday's game. Two positives, actually, we'll start with. Just, Nocky, the goal was really nice. It was a bit of intricate play. I know Huang has tried to cut it back. He's got a deflection, but that's a fantastic piece of football. So Wolves didn't play a lot of football. They played a lot of nice football, probably in their own third, where you can't really hurt anybody. But that was the one time they really hurt the opponent, and it showed what Wolves and Cunha are capable of.
Yeah, it was the one moment of quality we really produced, and you couldn't celebrate it because the lineup put his flag up. So he kind of ruined the moment for you then. But it was a quality finish, and that's what he's been. That's probably what he was lacking last season, was that instinctive element to his game. When he was probably better when he had a little bit of time to consider what he's going to do. Whereas those instinctive strikes were kind of bypassing him. this season he's put that to bed, and it was a lovely finish. And that's not a difficult, you know, that's a really difficult angle to finish from. And a lot of players put that in the back of the South Bank, don't they? So to finish it the way he did, I was really impressed with that strike. And I think as well, you know, when we're 3-1 down, we get the penalty, maybe it is a different game then as well. So there was moments for us in the game. And if you go purely by the stats, we weren't too bad. But I think that the picture on the day was slightly different than that. And that, it was disappointing because there was big moments either end and they capitalised and we didn't. So it was just a very frustrating day.
Yeah, Lockie, would you say that you're a lover or a hater of VAR?
Oh, no, don't get me started. I'll tell you what, Nero, it's the worst thing to come into football in my lifetime, VAR.
I agree 100%. I think linesmen, referees, fourth officials, all the rest of it, I think they're all as honest as the day's long and they give what they see. VAR is a minefield, and there's three people in the stand and there's two people at back at wherever it is. And then Gary Neville saying on telly it's a penalty, then Carragher saying it's not a penalty, and then all of a sudden there's a decision and it's chaos. It's not for me. I just don't like it.
Well, you've done it now, Ned. You've started knocking off, and that's going to be it for half an hour now.
Ryan, you can go, mate. Me and Ned are going to sort this one out for a while. I think the problem is it's re-refereeing the game. You've got that's officials it. Who are using it as a crutch as well, because if they're not sure, they just stay quiet. For me, I think everyone gives referee sticks because it's part of the game, whereas I don't think they've ever been all that bad. You go with their decision, they're going to make a few howlers, the same as a player going through one-on-one is going to put one, you know, into Asda car park from now and then. It's just part of the game. So
Mo Kamara did that.
More than one occasion, yeah. I just think it's ruining the spectacle of the game. And a lot of the people that we go with, Ryan and myself now, they don't want to go anymore because it's taken those spontaneous moments off you that we go to football for the minute when the ball hits the back of the net. You take your Leicester goal, for instance. I mean, we've spoken about that, and it's one of the favourite moments of any of us supporting the team. As soon as that hit the net, we all would have been looking and waiting for VAR to intervene if it was a twap now. So it takes those moments away, those special moments, and it's just, I hate it. I'd stick the lot in the bin if it was me, but unfortunately
I agree. I'm not a lover, that's for sure.
For those watching live on the show, it's Aston Villa 1, Liverpool 2. Not that it makes a lot of difference, but it was an Emi Martinez own goal, the opening goal for Liverpool. So, yeah,
shame.
Maybe that'll calm him down a little bit. Who knows? But what great keeper regardless. Yeah, VAR, definitely in the bin. I was pro-technology, Ned, at the start of the season. Well, until it came in, but it's those using it. And I feel as football as an entertainment sport, you should be looking for reasons to give a goal, not take them away. And Wolves have had some absolute stinkers this season. As Lockie says, it's, and I suppose for you as players as well, you play to win, you want to do well, you want to enjoy your football. When you're at work all week, your football's your moment of release. And that moment of ecstasy when you're going nuts with your mates, you can't do that anymore. And I don't know, it's not just for that, because there's like having a beer, the bills at the laugh, Mickey taking, that's all great. And if your team's playing well, great as well. But that moment of ecstasy, when the ball hits the back of the net, nothing else matters. And you've got, I mean, we were at Villa Park when we were 2-0 down and won 3-2. So there was more of a couple of seconds of ecstasy. I think, yeah, there was all kinds going on. But those moments of ecstasy are in danger of like putting a whole generation, as Jeff Shee called Wolves fans, the legacy fans, and putting them off football forever. And it's a real danger to the sport.
Listen, we're not tennis, we're not rugby, and we're not cricket.
Absolutely.
That's the thing.
Absolutely.
Because there's time in all those three sports, there's time. In football, it's instant.
Let's move ourselves into a happy time. Let's take us back to a time around February the 18th, 1995, where it finished Wolverhampton Wanderers 1, Leicester City 0. And we are so delighted to be joined by the goal scorer. I think it was Tyler's favourite ever Wolves goal. It's still my dad's favourite ever Wolves goal, Ned. Mark Venus intercepts. He plays the ball into the centre circle. David Kelly drops the shoulder. He swings it outright to Goodman. Goodman takes a touch. He chips it to the far post. And Kelly pops it in for 1-0. Ned, talk me through that goal.
I don't need to. You've just done it.
I didn't score it, though. I wish I did.
Yeah, I don't think there's very many goals that are better than diving headers, are there?
No.
I mean, overhead kick and stuff like that, I'd give that one, and you know, just certain strikes from outside the box. But everybody likes a diving header, you know. And I was glad that Don took his time a little bit on that right wing before he crossed it over for me to catch up.
Yeah, it was just, I don't, some goals just live with you, and it was. It was quite, I mean, you could see the modelling. I was watching the goal earlier on and listening to John Watson's commentary. It was a muddy, sticky pitch. It wasn't a particularly pretty game, but it wasn't in those times in January, February. It wasn't particularly pretty football, but Vino's got his foot in. He's fed it into you. You've dropped the shoulder. And it's just, it's one of those historic goals that just, I mean, earlier on in the season, we had Ewan Robertson talking about his hat-trick at the Albion. Obviously, moments like that. And this goal, like you said, the diving header now seems to be a dying art, because teams now quite often, when they get to the byline, they're cutting the ball back. There's not very often now teams are getting wingers out wide and putting crosses in like that. It seems to be a lot more patient, or if you can't definitely find the pass, they start again.
Well, I think sometimes everybody's looking for the perfect goal, aren't they? The 27 passes and then slide it into the far post and reel away sort of thing. But yeah, we lived in a different time and we played a different game. I'm not critical whatsoever of how football's played these days. I think it can be as exciting, but you know, from a personal point of view, for me scoring the diving header was a really, really high point for me at the club, because it was it was a goal that won that FA Cup tie, and I was very, very happy to score it, as I was on all of my 28,000 other goals that I've scored.
Ned, we were happy as well when that went in. It was a brilliant goal, and obviously Don was fantastic. I know he got that terrible injury and with his like the same sort of injury as that Jimenez had, and he sort of came back from that. But it was a different time, but still, me, Nocky and Tyler and many of the fans that watch this as well, we talk about that being, it was less complex, wasn't it? There was the no VAR, and it was just, there was a lot more aggression. I'm not so sure I want all those tackles in today's game, because there's some absolute stinkers flying around, although Nocky loves a reducer. But football, certainly what it is, even though I don't want to go back to the Championship, because I love being in the Premier League and I want Wolves to improve, but there's certainly that era and time, it was different, wasn't it? You know what I mean? A lot more blood and thunder, and you could probably get away with a bit more then. What do you think, Ned?
It was, and you know, and to be fair, you know, when I played a long time ago, it was encouraged, you know, centre halves kick the striker after the first 10 minutes to get him out of the way and try and get on top of him. Strikers trying to run past centre halves to get a decent first touch and try and sort of have the emphasis on you attacking and playing well. Whereas now it's as I say, I'm not critical of it at all, because you know I love the game, I love football. I love being involved in the coaching part and the commentaries when I'm doing that with WM. But it was a different, completely different game back then. You know, you scored the goal, the referee or the linesman gave it. You didn't see the flag on the sideline. It was a goal. That was it. You all went back to the halfway line, where, like you said just a moment ago, we can't do that now. And that is massively frustrating.
Yeah, it's poor. Just a couple of questions. I mean, I've had so many questions to ask you. I mean, there was three different Daves then. They're all Daves. Definitely not saying that you're Dave, because I know we can't call you that. but there was a Dave, and a David then asking different questions. Just a couple of things. I think one of the times I felt really sorry for you, Ned, was when you scored for England, for Ireland, and the game got abandoned. Just wanted if you could talk a little bit about that moment.
Oh, it counts in my house. That still counts. you don't go along your footballing career very often and score against England, so it still counts in my house. It's disappointing, obviously, because of the manner of and why it was chalked off. You know, with the supporters causing chaos. But out of all of that, that sort of that difficulty and that riot that assume it was football stadiums are much better. Everything's more set up to be more safe. So if anything, I can take a little bit of a sort of happiness that stadiums have improved from what they were 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's a nice way of looking at it. It was a strange moment, because I remember I was watching the game with my dad, and obviously I want England to win unless you scored. And I was like, It was such a strange moment, because I think you, Nocky, you want, if a Wolves player is playing, regardless of their international, you want them to score, don't you? Unless it's like England in the finals of the World Cup or the Euros or something, you want the Wolves players to score.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love my country, but you get emotionally attached to your team and the players in the team. It doesn't matter what country they play for, if they're still they feel part of your family, don't they? Wherever they are and wherever they're playing, so you always want to do the best and want to see them be successful. Even the players like Neves who've left the club, you want him to do well because of what they did when they were here. And you know, when you look at Ned and you look at the goal against Leicester, and it was years ago now, but it's still one of my happiest Wolves memories. And I remember you got a similar dive. Well, it probably wasn't similar. It was more of a falling header against the Albion when you scored in that game. And those are memories that you carry with you. And the cup run that year was fantastic. And we spoke about it off air, and you know, me and Ryan are both north of 40 now. And those are the memories that you probably feel a little bit fonder because you were younger and you were going with your family and you were engrossing it. But the football back then was brilliant. Everyone was 4-4-2. All the pitches were put-ins, and it was just a proper game with people kicking lumps out of each other. You score and then bang, we all go and get a pink afterwards. It was just a fantastic time to be a football fan. And
you'll get a pink afterwards to find out all the results.
Oh, exactly.
But we just do it on our phone now.
Oh yeah, the getting the Sports Argus. If you waited at the Expression store, or you got the train to New Street and picked it up from there, that was part of your Saturday afternoon. And now you've got it on the phone. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like having the instant stuff now. The X, Facebook, YouTube, you've got instant information like that, and it's great. But it's something else that's disappeared. Ned, a couple of other questions for you about your time at Wolves. Who would you say was the most talented player you ever played with when you was at Wolves?
I really like playing with Don. I had good times playing with Don. Bully was injured for a fair bit of the time when I signed for the club. Bully was out injured for quite a lot. And then when Don came in, I really enjoyed the partnership that we had. But I wouldn't say he was the best player. I thought Kevin Keane was a really, really good player. But I would say, and it really, really grates me to say it, I think the best player at the club consistently through my time was Tomo. I think Tomo is just a match.
Solid.
He's just an unsung hero. You know, he was, and this is not being critical of him or making him to sound to be worse, but he was a basic player. He knew what he was really good at. He knew what he could do. He knew how quick he was. He knew how to defend. He knew how to challenge. He knew how to stand at the far post and push 6'5" strikers out the way. And he was just clever. So I would say out of all the time there was probably better players, but Tomo overall was in my opinion, the star man.
And this is a bit of a stinker of a question, but I'll go ask it. Who was your favourite strike partner when you was at Molineux? Sorry,
yeah,
Ned.
Don, yeah, no-brainer. Yeah, I really like playing with Don. Enjoyed how we sort of complimented each other a little bit.
And what was your favourite ever goal scoring for Wolves, if we've not talked about it already?
You've already spoken about it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to reel off these questions, get as many as I can.
Definitely, I was in St Ives about 5 years ago, and this guy came up to me, and he said, "Are you David Kelly?" I said, "I am, yeah." He said, "This is my daughter, Kelly." He said, "I named her after you."
No way.
Goal for Leicester.
Wow.
And I'm stood there having a beer in St Ives in the Sloop. Everybody knows the Sloop. If anybody's been to St Ives, it's a fabulous pub. And I stood there with my pals, and it was quite surreal, really. But how lovely that
yeah, that must be,
that
I mean,
after all those years.
Yeah, no one's going to name anyone after us after our podcast, are they, Nocky? So, yeah, different after scoring goals. Two final questions. Any regrets at Wolves? Anything that just...
Any regrets?
Yeah.
No, listen, it's well out there that I'm an Albion fan. I have been, I am, that's it. I loved signing for... When Keegan phoned me up and said that he was selling me, and I was devastated because I'd just won player of the year and top goals.
Scored a load of goals in that year as well.
And we got promoted to the Premier League and stuff like that. And I said to him, I said, "Who's in for me?" And he said, "Well, we've agreed a fee," he said, "from one club." He said, "And there's another club that's interested." And when he said the Wolves, I said, "Right, I'm in, that's it." Spoke to Graham Turner 2 days later. And I shook his hand in the hotel. And then I got a better offer from Forest on the way home. And I phoned Graham Turner up and I said, "I've had an offer from Forest." He said, "Are you going?" I went, "No." I said, "I've shook your hand." I said, "I'm coming to the Wolves. That's it. I'm in." And that's my footballing career, and that's my football philosophy. Once you sign for somebody, you're all in, you know. And whether I'm an Albion fan or not makes absolutely zero difference to me. I loved it at the Wolves. The supporters were good to me. The staff were good to me. And the players were good to me. So why would I not like it?
Well, Bully started off with an Albion shirt on. No one cares where you've come from. When you put the gold and black on, you give it all. That's all that really matters. Yeah. And it, for me, I mean, don't get me wrong, and I'm sure you didn't enjoy it yourself, but playing Albion and beating Albion is absolutely fantastic. But it doesn't really matter who someone's played for. You do your best and deliver, who cares?
I went from Newcastle to Wolves and then I signed for Sunderland. And I got a standing ovation. Yeah, I got a standing
ovation. You shit-ass, Ned.
But I went back with Sunderland and Peter Reid had put me on the bench. So I came on and I got a standing ovation at St James's by the Newcastle fans.
Fair play.
So, you know, I'm all in. It's like my coaching career with all the people that I've worked with. You know, if you give me the job, I'm going to give you the best I possibly can.
Yeah, recent gig with Troy, wasn't it, at Forest Green, looking for your next opportunity now, yeah?
Yeah, well, very very short-lived 29 days for me and Troy. enjoyed working for him, Troy. He's got really good ideas. He's got a good chance if he's given another opportunity. I'm certainly looking to get back in and try and get another job.
Good stuff.
I haven't forgiven Troy from Wembley, to be completely honest with you. So.
Yeah, pass on Nocky's regards. Yeah.
Nocky, apart from my wife, who is a mad blue nose, Troy Dean is a bigger blue nose than her.
You know what? As much as he broke our hearts at Wembley, yeah, I respect that. I respect someone for loving their football club. Me and Nocky bleed Wolverhampton Wanderers, and we love it. And you know, I respect anyone that loves their football team, whether they're a rival or not. If you love football, I understand it. I don't have to like it, but I respect it because I've been down all the roads and journeys that they've been on as well.
That's the thing as well. You know, ultimately, none of us are trying to upset each other. We just support who we support. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, just get
with
on.
A little bit of shithousing thrown in now and again. So talk us through your goal for Albion, Ned.
Hey, listen, I celebrate whenever I scored. I celebrate. Absolutely no issue.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, no question about it, mate. No question. And last but not least, this may come in. You may have answered this already as well, but is there a particular moment or highlight that you remember that you're really fond of at Wolves? Maybe other than that goal.
Well, John McGinn punching me in the face in the playoffs weren't
John McGinley, yeah.
Really?
I forgot about that. Oh, now you've started off Nocky again. We don't need.
He was horrible. He was, wasn't he? He was horrible as a footballer.
I've seen him a few times since that game over the last few years, and he still hasn't apologised.
Ned, I know this is how petty football fans can be. On Saturday afternoon, I'm going to Wembley with a mate that works for Oxford United to watch them in the playoffs. And I'm only going because I want Bolton to lose. And that happened, yeah, because of what happened 30 years ago. I'm still holding on to that. So come on, Oxford, and James Henry, ex-Wolves player, playing for them on the bench. So, yeah,
We'd have won that day. If he'd have been sent off, he should have done. We'd have won that game.
Well, if Ned had punched him back, we might have won.
No, we got 10.
And that goes back to decisions, does it? The referee never saw it.
Now you want VAR, Nocky. Now you
I
want
saw
VAR.
It, and I was at the other end of the pitch, and I saw it. No, VAR saw probably it. Would have sent Ned off for diving.
Yeah, I saw it.
All right, let's move on to a few more questions. This has been episode 99 of the Wolves Report with Ned Kelly, Mark Nock, and myself, Ryan Lester, reliving some memories, some Leicester goals, some home truths, and just talking about the modern game. Great show so far. Richard asking some questions there. Richard says, taking into account the last 10 games, the weak squad and the likely stronger league, how concerned are you for next season? Nocky, you can have that one.
I'm concerned. I mean, we kind of touched on it earlier, but you can't predict the future, can you? They might start off and they might already have three or four players lined up. They get them straight in. We're at pre-season with an extra four or five players. We've offloaded a couple and we're looking strong. I don't think that's going to happen. I have a feeling we're going to go into pre-season pretty much looking how we look now. And I think a lot of our business will be done quite late. I think the league will be stronger next year. I don't think we'll have the three whipping boys that we've had this season. I think you're going to have to be a lot better. So I am concerned about it. I think where the positives might be for us is I think Leicester are likely to start on a bit of a points deduction, so that could help us. Ipswich with a double promotion, I think you're always going to struggle because they've still got League One players. So you're probably going to have to be better than one of the teams. So it's going to be tricky. I'm worried about this form. I'm worried about carrying this form into next year. So I think if we can start well, we get everybody fit, we've got enough quality to do okay. But the window's going to have to be, it's going to have to be a good one.
Yeah, no, I've heard a vicious rumour that there's a few clubs worried about getting point deductions next season.
Well, hopefully they all get them. Mind you, it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, Forest had one this year and it's not hurt them at all. It's almost worth taking the risk to put yourself
Everton
in that position.
As well, yeah. Not Everton, has it?
Yeah, I think Wolves would be below Everton now. If Everton hadn't had their points taken off them, I think Wolves had lost another place. So, if anything, those points have given Wolves an extra 3.2 million. So, we'll take that for the moment. Let's have a little look. Ned, this is what you can have this one. Carlos, what do you think the main factors are for us having a downturn in form?
Yeah, losing the players to injuries.
So, but I know we go repeating it again, but it's the depth as well, isn't it, really? The one thing I didn't mention earlier on, I forgot to, one of the positives, was the introduction of Enzo Fernandez. Now, I know Nocky thinks you'll probably go out on loan next season, but to see a young, raw talent that's prepared to take people on, I know I'm just going back a little bit, but yeah, it was great to see that young player. I forgot, he was on my notes, I forgot. But yeah, lessons to be learned, Ned.
Well,
depth, quality.
Depth and quality and more covering in more places, you know, and it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult to attract, you know, who they're going to be going after. You know, there's a lot of money out there in the Premier League, you know, and our Wolves up there, or our Wolves a top 14 team on the payment scales as well.
No.
I'm not sure that. Well, they can't if they've got a squad that small, unless they're playing obscene money to some players out. And bearing in mind, Guedes' wages have been covered. Some of Fabio's have been covered.
Third or fourth lowest wage bill in the league.
Apparently the fourth. Fourth lowest wage. Yeah,
that's got to be up, doesn't it? To attract him, you've got to pay for him, and to attract him, you've got to pay for them whilst they're there. You've got to give them the dough. Because players have choices, so and they'll go. Let's be honest. We're in a ruthless world. Players will go for an extra one.
Yeah, do you know what? I know people talk about that, Ned, but I've never had an issue. I know football's a short career, so. You know what I mean? You're one horrendous tackle off not playing again. So you've got to make the most of your career. And if the big move comes up, you've got to take it. As long as a player is trying their best wearing the colours of my club, if they go before that and they want to go, then so be it. You know what I mean? You've got to do what you can.
I said last year when the boy's going to Manchester City and he's refusing to play, get rid of him. You're getting 50 million quid for him. Get rid of him. If he wants to go, get rid of him. No issues. Just off your pop.
Yeah, he's doing well. He should have been a sub for a season, hasn't he? So not that I'm bitter at all.
Well, that's what City does, isn't it? They get these. I mean, Jack Grealish and Mahrez was subs for quite a long period of when they first signed for City.
Yeah.
This is. I don't think you've got your season ticket at Wolves next year, Ned. But so this one, well, me and Nocky will do this one. do you think Wolves banking on an apparent season ticket waiting list being as strong as 2019? And that's why there will inevitably raise prices. Plus, do you think it will backfire? Now, rumours were circling on Twitter from some people that usually are in the know, others that may do and may not. There was an alleged 12% season ticket hike. That's only a rumour. I think for a team that's had the season that Wolves had, I don't think that will be acceptable. It's not in with inflation. It's certainly not in terms of anything that Wolves are achieving to justify that with a cup, anything at all, Nocky. And not only that, from my rough basic mathematics skills, if Wolves have taken 20 million in gate receipts last year and it's up, what's it worth? 2 million quid, just over 2 million quid, if you're taking out the away 3,000 for the ticket. So if it's roughly worth 2 million quid, what is 2 million quid going to do for Wolves next season in terms of the balancing off and taking more off fans, or what's 2 million going to do really?
2 million's 2 million if you're a business. That's the reality of it. And I think if Wolves weren't going to put a heavy hike onto it, they would have announced it before the Palace game. The fact they've left it until after the Palace game probably tells you 12's not going to be too far off. There is a waiting list. I think there's about, 7,000 on the waiting list. So I do think they're probably banking on, if you can't afford to pay it, somebody else will. it might only be 2 million quid, but if it's 2 million quid that they're saying we're going to put that towards the transfers, that could make a difference between getting a couple of players in if you use it the right way. I'm not saying I agree with it, because I absolutely don't. I don't think there's any basis to put people through more financial hardship when everyone in the country is already struggling. But I think we're going to have to expect that it's going to be pretty severe. If they were going to do us a favour, they would have announced it during the last few games.
Yeah, when we announced it in March.
When you're on such a poor run, you give everybody a lift. The fact they haven't, I think you've got to brace yourself for a bit of a nasty increase.
Can I just say on that one as well, it's across the board as well. It's at all clubs. There's very, very few of freezing prices, you know, and sadly, that's the world that we live in, that the Premier League is the biggest league in the world. And at whatever club that you go to or whatever club you go and visit, there's waiting lists everywhere. You know, you're saying the Wolves have got 7,000 in a waiting list. They're going to snap it up, because that's the world we live in.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it, Ned? Because it's not like if you're nipping out for a tin of paints, you go into Homebase or B&Q, you can pick which one. You can't pick which football team you support, because 100%. You're locked into. You can only shop at one place, which is annoying. Now, I don't want these prices to happen, and I just don't think it's realistic or fair to expect fans to pay that. But they know they will, because they've got you, because you only love one football team. So exactly.
I don't disagree with anything anybody's saying. It's just the facts of it all is that there's waiting lists everywhere, and sadly somebody else will pay.
It feels a bit naughty. What one team that did keep their prices the same though were Crystal Palace. They froze their prices from last season, and they come to Wolves and give us a football slapping as well. So, but they probably will lose anyone. Oh, yeah, you're right. I think I've read that as well. Yeah, any team that has, then absolutely fair play. I'm sure, Nocky, when the prices are announced, we'll be on social media talking about that. Zach, thank you for creating some debate. Ned, next one's for you. Mr. Moonlight asks, do you think players took their foot off the pedal in the running, knowing they had nothing to play for, or do you believe they were knackered? Ned?
Yeah, I don't think anybody ever takes their foot off. I really don't. I think players were coming back not match fit or not sharp fitness. Do I believe that players are knackered? Yeah, sometimes you're knackered during the week. You're not knackered on match day unless you're getting beat.
It's fair point. I've played football to a very low level. So has Nocky. When you're winning, running's easier, isn't it?
Exactly. You're only knackered when you're losing.
Yeah, God, we've been knackered a lot recent, Nocky, haven't we? We've been knackered about 2 months.
I didn't run if we were winning or losing, mate, so I wouldn't know, to be honest.
it's a tough one. I don't think anyone's not been trying, but there hasn't been that zest, there hasn't been that spark, that sort of zip that some of these Gary O'Neill performances away at Chelsea, away at Spurs, that those spark and gnarl in the games, it's gone a bit... There has not been a lack of effort, Nocky, but there's not really been that bite that we had before. Yeah.
I think you've got to remember the human beings as well. I mean, when that ball hit the net against Coventry and they beat us 3-2, that took a lot out of a lot of people. So I think they were all expecting a trip to Wembley. They were going to play on, you know, the most famous pitch in world football, and that was taken away from them. And I think naturally it's going to take the wind out of your sails a little bit. And sometimes it is hard to get motivated. They might be on... you know, fortunes, but they're still human beings. They're still young lads who are still learning about how to manage these kinds of situations. So I don't think they so much took their foot off the gas. I think they took a massive hit that they just haven't been able to recover from. And confidence is so important in football. And when you lose a game like that to Coventry, and let's be honest, on that day, Coventry should have beaten us by more goals. It never should
have been over at half time.
Yeah. So when you've had that kind of punch in the guts, and then you hear another player's gone. And we spoke about injuries, and our injury list isn't actually massive, but when you put it into positional sense, we lost 4 strikers, and it's hard to recover from that when it's such an important area.
Gone.
I think it was probably the straw that broke the camel's back was the defeat against Coventry. And I just don't think they've been able to mentally recover from that. So I've been as critical of them as anyone, but I think when you look at the bigger picture, it's, you know, there's probably more to it than not putting it in. I just think they've gone. I just think they want the season over and we go again.
I would say the circumstances as well of Gary not being able to pick his favoured 11 since the Coventry game.
It's a long way to go, isn't it? It's, I mean, how many times has Nokia Wolves been able to pick the team he wanted the whole season? You could probably pick it on one hand when you've had your full team ready. Mr. Moon,
this is Premier League. It's Premier League football, though, isn't it? I mean, with 6 years in, you should be able, after 6 years, to swap quality for quality. If you lose a couple of players, you should be able to do what Villa have done. And the fact we can't, that's a failing of the club. It's not a failing of O'Neill, it's a failing of the club. And when you're losing, you lose a striker and your whole season falls off a cliff because you're bringing in Nathan Fraser. And we don't know what damage we've done to Nathan Fraser by flogging him when he's clearly not ready. There's a lot of failings higher up than the players and the manager is where my thought process is on it.
Yeah, I agree, 100% agree with that. You've got to be Premier League ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, unfortunately, Wolves have probably got about 13 or 14 of them. Mr. Moonlight, thank you for your question, creating the debate. Ned, this one's for you. Should Gary O'Neill be given an extended contract? Should he be fully backed in the summer? Or would you pull the plug after a disappointing few months? Oof, Richard.
Oh, hold on. Should he be given an extended contract? Yes, probably, because they probably got him on the cheap and he's done a really, really good job. Should be back fully in the summer? Absolutely, yes. And would you pull the plug? No, definitely not.
I mean, there are some murmurs of some fans, Nocky, of people being a little bit angry after the game. I won't reveal what you said after the game, Nocky, in our group chat. I mean, I wouldn't wish that on anybody, some of the things that you said to me. But it's a passionate game and you do get heated after it. And that's because we love our club. We care. We care desperately. And it hurts when you lose. And it hurts more the more you're losing because it's just you get locked into it. My opinion on Gary O'Neill, I'm focusing on all the good stuff he's done. When he's had his strongest 11, Wolves have put on some fantastic performances. Beat Man City, double Spurs, double Chelsea. They've had some good halves of football earlier in the season. Very unlucky at Old Trafford in the opening game. So taking away the last few months, obviously, can't totally do that because the form guys had us in a misery. But he's done some really good stuff. There's been some good football. He's moved the ball forward quickly. We've scored more goals than we have done in a long time. So with the right players, Gary has produced, but he's been a victim of the squad as much as anybody else. So I'm extending, and I think we'll probably lose Max Kilman. I think we'll probably lose Neto and maybe one more, but I think the club are aware that multiple signings need to be made, and I do think that will happen. They weren't not going to be coming come the end of come September the 1st be with 18 available players again. They just can't. Well, if they do, they deserve what's coming their way. Zen, Richard, and Zen, I thank you, dog. Then, but thank you. Next question. Now, this is an interesting one. Paul asks, should we as fans be grateful we are in the Premier League, or should we expect a little bit more from the club? Oof. Okay.
Go on, Ned. I don't think you should be grateful. You've deserved to be there for the last 6 years. And should we expect a little bit more? Yeah, absolutely. I think you do expect a little bit more from the club because, you know, with no disrespect to anybody or no pointing a finger at anybody, the summer was a shambles. You know, what happened with the manager leaving and Gary coming in at thelastminute.com, that's the club, that's the hierarchy. So, just to
add on to that, Ned, the Ilan Balagay, Lopetegui's friend in the media, he said some quite strong things about the Wolves owners. He said the club had lied to him and moved the goalpost several times. And that's a concern. Obviously, we don't know what's gone on behind closed doors, but for an international journalist with a million followers, granted, he's Lopetegui's friend and he's going to back him, but those are quite strong things and concerning things to say about the football club.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously knows, isn't he? Because it's his pal. So you've got to believe that he's telling the truth. You know, so should we expect a little bit more from the club? Yes, absolutely. You know, and it's the fans' favourite thing to complain about, isn't it? Not getting enough information through the club, not getting any information, like you just said there, about the season tickets. You know, not getting that information is important for lots of people.
Yeah, it's... And I want to know where we, as football fans, we all want to know where we stand. I know Gary's put at his press conference. Crikey, I've only been drinking water. At his press conference on last week, in terms of how much money he's got to spend. Now, I felt a bit sorry for him because what manager is going to say, oh yeah, I've got loads to spend, because no one at the club, nobody would do it, would they? So either he's telling the truth, which is a concern. He's either playing poker or somewhere in the middle. My tank Nocky, he's somewhere in the middle. And don't say thumbscrew either.
No, I think he's telling the truth. I think that we know that we run a self-sufficient model. We've got to sell to buy. But that feeds into Paul's question, because if you're going to whack 12% on, you're not treating me like a supporter anymore. You're treating me as a customer. So as a customer, I expect more of a product from the extra money that I'm putting into it. So if we're in a position where we're 15th, 16th next season, and you're charging us an extra 12% on top of that season tickets, Molyneux is going to turn very quickly. I can guarantee you that, because there are already some disgruntled people. So I think that there needs to be some consideration as to what they're doing and what the long-term vision is. Because if you're happy for us to sit in the middle of the Premier League, then you've got to reflect that in your increases. If you want us to push on and you're putting 12% in, that's absolutely fine. If we're going to be challenging top six, top seven next year. But if we're going to stagnate, or we're going to go backwards, and you're charging us an extra, you know, whatever it's going to work out per season ticket on top of what we're already paying, you're going to get some very disgruntled people. And when Molyneux turns, it's not a nice place to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great question from Paul, and a great answer from you, Nocky. There's been some fantastic questions in the show tonight. We took out the match player writings at the crest of Nocky, because I think we've been talking about defeats enough recently and wanted to get some more info and some stories about Ned, his Leicester goal, his disallowed goal, or his goal that stood against England. We'll give him that one, I guess. And we took more of your questions. So I hope you've enjoyed that format tonight. We're at the part of the show when it's prediction time, and Wolves go to Anfield, ouch, on the last game of the season. We've had a couple of correct predictions, Ned. Not many, though. I always say the same score and scoreline. So we'll start with you, Ned Kelly. Your prediction, Liverpool, the Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Well, Jürgen's farewell.
That's three penalties.
Yeah, I can't say anything but than a home win, sadly. Possibly 3-1.
Well, I'll take the goal all day long. Knocker, who's going to score the first goal, Ned?
The thing is, I like to be a little bit optimistic and hopefully get a goal. So at least it gives you something to bounce up and down about when you're at the match.
It tells us our hopeful if we just hope we get a goal, never mind anything else. Who's going to score the first goal?
Oh, I don't care. I don't care who scores.
give me a player, any player's name. It's got to go in the log.
Oh, right, okay. Salah.
Oh, Ned, spiteful that is. Knocker?
Realistic.
I'm really worried about this one, to be honest, because it's his last game. They're going to want to put on a show. I can see 5 or 6 in this one. I really can. I think they're going to absolutely come at us like a freight train. I'll go for a conservative 4-0 to Liverpool. And it's going to be someone horrible scoring, isn't it? Like a Matip or someone like that. I'll go for a Harvey Elliott, because he's horrible and all. He'll get the first.
Why is Matip and Harvey Elliott horrible?
Because everyone else, it's Salah, or, you know, it's these top players. Remember when Yoel Almander turned into Pele inside our penalty area? I don't think he ever scored a goal after that. He just, with that sort of team, if you need a duck breaking, you play Wolves.
He's right, though. Players that don't score just end up scoring past Wolves. It always seems to happen. Ned, I've got a tradition of saying Wolves 1-0 at Cunha. So I'm going to do it again. I've not been right all season. I'm not going to be wrong now. So it'll be 38 out of 38. I've got wrong. And there we go. This has been
episode... That clear stuff you're drinking isn't gin?
I wish it was. It's a bit Monday night's a little bit early for me. This has been episode 99 of the Wolves Report. Thank you so much to former Wolves striker Ned Kelly for joining us on the show. You can hear him regularly on the punditry side of things at BBC WM, and soon I'm sure he'll be an assistant manager or manager again in the near future. Thank you to our club captain, Mark Nock, of the Wolves.